Welcome, curious minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're embarking on, well, a really fascinating journey. We're going to unpack some ancient wisdom that, you know, holds surprising, maybe even urgent relevance for our modern lives. Mm-hmm. The ones that often feel pretty overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a really compelling set of sources today, and they all revolve around one single powerful verse. Psalm 119.15, I meditate on your precepts and consider your ways.
It's a short verse, but there's a lot packed in there.
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is to truly understand what this verse means. How does it function as a process of, well, the source calls it spiritual cleansing. And critically, why does it matter to you right now?
Right.
In this world, just awash with information, distraction, How can this practice maybe offer an anchor? And just quickly, when we say precepts here, we're talking about divine principles, God's instructions, basically, sort of a moral framework.
Yeah, guidelines for life.
And considering his ways. That seems to be about reflecting on his character, his methods, the patterns described in the scriptures, not just rules, but his nature, how he interacts with the world.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is how this ancient wisdom isn't just a religious idea. It's presented as a profound framework for navigating, well, information overload, for getting mental clarity, and even building resilience.
Resilience, okay.
Yeah. So we're going to explore not just the what of this intentional reflection, but really the why. You know, the underlying mechanisms, the transformative power, all drawn directly from the ideas in our source material.
Okay, let's unpack this then. This powerful idea of meditation and reflection as a way to, like, clear the clutter and realign our focus. Now, for many of us, when we hear meditation, we probably picture emptying the mind, right?
That's the common image, definitely. Sitting quietly, trying to let thoughts just drift away.
Yeah. But our sources, they present a very different, really specific kind of meditation tied to this verse. So what exactly does it mean to meditate on God's precepts in this context?
That's a really crucial distinction, because the source makes it incredibly clear. This kind of biblical meditation, it isn't about emptying the mind. It's actually about filling it with truth.
Filling it, okay.
Yeah, it's a highly active, intentional process. Think of it more like repeating, rehearsing, reflecting deeply on specific words or principles until they become really ingrained. Not just concepts you know about, but part of your daily thoughts, your reactions.
Uh-huh.
The source actually points to Joshua 1.8, which advises, keep this book of the law always on your lips, meditate on it day and night. You see, it's not passive. It's an immersive mental engagement that actively shapes your inner world.
So it's about intentional engagement then, not disengagement from thought, less a blank slate, more like a guided renovation of your mental space.
That's a good way to put it, guided renovation.
The source paints it almost like spiritual water, actively washing our thoughts, clearing mental clutter, and replacing maybe anxiety with grounding truths.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me wonder, you know, in your daily life, what are you actively filling your mind with? Is it the constant news cycle? Is it personal worries? Or is it something more intentional, something that actively clarifies rather than just confuses?
That's the question, isn't it?
And for someone used to the idea of emptying the mind to find peace, What would the source say is maybe the biggest hurdle or perhaps the most surprising benefit of this filling with truth approach?
Well, the initial hurdle, as the source kind of implies, is often simply the discipline of intentional focus in a world that's basically designed for distraction.
Right. Everything pulls at your attention.
Exactly. We're so conditioned to just passively consume things or let our minds wander into worry. But the surprising benefit, I think, is that by actively filling your mind with these precepts, you're not just memorizing stuff. You're cultivating inner order.
Inner order.
Yeah. You're essentially training your mind to focus on what the source considers profound truths. And that, in turn, helps filter out the mental noise, the emotional turbulence we all experience. It's like a proactive defense against mental chaos rather than just a temporary escape.
Okay, a proactive defense. I like that. That brings us neatly to the second part of the verse then. Beyond meditating on precepts, it also talks about considering God's ways. So what's the distinction here? How is considering different from meditating in this context? And how does this act of considering add to this idea of mental and spiritual recalibration?
Right. Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, considering his ways seems to go a step further than meditating on precepts. Meditation is about internalizing specific truths, right?
Hmm.
But considering his ways is more about observing and reflecting on the patterns and principles of, well, divine action and character in the world around you. It means slowing down.
Taking time.
taking time, yeah, to truly ponder how these precepts actually play out, how they inform a larger worldview. The source highlights that this process is profoundly transformative because it actively helps to, and this is the quote, uproot pride and teach humility.
Humility. Okay, that's interesting. Not just learning facts.
No, not at all. And it's not about self-deprecation either. It's more profound recentering. It's the humility of recognizing there's a larger narrative, a wisdom beyond our immediate grasp. And paradoxically, that frees us from this immense pressure of thinking we have to control every single outcome ourselves.
Ah, so letting go of that need for control.
Exactly. It allows for a deeper, maybe more resilient kind of agency, one that's aligned with a higher purpose, rather than just our own immediate desires or fears.
And it really strikes me that this isn't just a gentle reevaluation. The source seems to suggest it's almost a radical recentering, especially given how much modern life pushes self-focus.
It really does.
You know, we're often told, trust your gut, follow your own path, prioritize your own thoughts. This practice of considering something greater than ourselves, it really brings humility to the forefront, doesn't it? Shifting from my way to maybe a higher way.
Yeah.
What are the deeper challenges and rewards the source highlights in making that kind of shift? Because it doesn't sound easy.
No, it's not presented as easy. The source suggests the main challenge is surrendering our immediate impulses, you know, and that perceived need for total self-reliance. It asks us to confront the idea that maybe our personal wisdom isn't always the highest or the most effective path.
Okay, confronting our own limitations.
Yes. But the reward, the source says, is immense. It's described as a purification of our motives and a clarification of our direction. By consciously aligning our internal compass with principles that transcend our personal biases, we can experience a really profound sense of peace and, well, rightness.
Peace and rightness.
Yeah. This process helps us make decisions not just based on what benefits us right now, but what aligns with a broader, more enduring wisdom. And that leads to a much deeper sense of purpose and stability in the long run.
Okay, so we've kind of established the what and the why of this practice. But the real test, as the source points out, is how does this ancient wisdom hold up against the pressures of our world right now?
Right, the application.
Let's look at how it provides an anchor in, well, what often feels like chaos. Our source connects this practice directly to pressing current events. How does meditating and considering actually apply when the world feels like it's spinning out of control? You know, with geopolitical tensions, economic uncertainty, climate crises.
Yeah, and this is where the source gets really practical, I think. It provides very specific examples of how this practice acts as an anchor, not by ignoring reality, that's key, but by reframing it.
Reframing.
So take natural disasters, for instance, like the devastating storms mentioned in the Caribbean and the U.S. Meditating on these precepts is presented as a way to transform panic into peace. It's not that the storm disappears, obviously.
Right.
But the internal experience shifts. People are reminded that there's a power greater than the storm itself, and that allows them to find this deep, quiet resolve even amidst external destruction. They can focus on what they can control, their inner state, their actions, rather than being just overwhelmed by what they can't.
That's a powerful distinction. It's about grounding yourself internally, not just wishing the problems away or pretending they don't exist. It's a deep internal realignment.
Exactly. And the source continues this theme. In times of war, like in Europe and other global unrest, it's about remembering a higher sovereignty.
How so?
Well, for example, by meditating on passages like Psalm 2, which speaks of divine oversight even when nations are in turmoil, individuals can find a sense of enduring order that exists beyond the immediate conflict. It helps dissolve that all-consuming anxiety of feeling utterly powerless.
Replacing it with trust.
Replacing it with a quiet trust that there's an overarching narrative, even if you can't see it clearly right now. And even with really pressing economic struggles, inflation, job losses, things we see everywhere, meditation is shown as a way to realign yourself to a trust in provision.
Okay.
By referencing something like Philippians 4:1 line, the practice helps individuals reframe anxieties about scarcity. It fosters a mindset more towards gratitude, maybe resourcefulness, allowing them to navigate those financial challenges with greater mental fortitude.
So it paints this vivid picture then. This practice isn't an escape from reality at all. It's a robust, active way to engage with it, finding peace and trust amidst the very real challenges we all face. It's like building an inner fortress, maybe, that can withstand those external pressures.
That's a great image, an inner fortress.
And what's particularly illuminating, I think, is that this isn't just theory. Our source gives us these glimpses into real-world applications across the globe. It shows its universal impact. Can you share some of those case studies? They sound compelling.
Absolutely, and they really do bring the concept to life. Consider the farmers in Kenya, for example. During severe droughts, facing potential ruin, they reportedly meditate on Psalm 67 daily.
Psalm 67, okay.
And the insight here isn't just about hoping for rain. It's about how meditating on this specific psalm, which talks about God's blessing and the earth yielding its increase, how it reconfigures their internal landscape.
Ah, interesting.
It transforms despair into a more proactive mindset. It allows them to focus on community support, on resilience, maybe even innovative farming techniques, rather than just succumbing to helplessness. Even when the external conditions are still harsh, it gives them a framework for sustained hope and action.
That's a powerful testament. How this practice can shift not just an individual, but maybe whole communities' mindsets when facing huge adversity. It's not just personal solace, it's a catalyst for collective resilience.
Indeed. And we see similar things elsewhere. In Brazil, families displaced by terrible floods gather to recite psalms. They find not just comfort, but the source says a profound sense of peace despite their circumstances. And think about the Caribbean again. Survivors meditating on Psalm 91 nightly to cleanse fear after storms. Psalm 91 speaks of divine protection, right? So this daily reflection helps them actively replace those vivid, terrifying memories with assurances of safety. It enables them to rebuild their lives with renewed courage.
That's incredible. Actively replacing fear.
Yes. And in Ukraine, amidst the ongoing conflict, believers are described meditating underground, considering God's ways right there in the face of immense adversity. It's not avoidance. It's portrayed as a defiant act of seeking internal stability and meaning when the external world offers basically none.
A defiant act of seeking stability.
Yeah. Even in Asia, there's an example of students in India using Proverbs for wisdom during exams, transforming that pre-exam anxiety with trust and a higher intelligence, allowing them to approach that academic pressure with more calm and focus.
So these examples really demonstrate it's not just for extreme situations, is it? It seems like a versatile tool for navigating the whole spectrum of human experience. And the source also shares some compelling personal testimonies of renewal, showing how this practice transforms individual lives in really intimate ways.
It does. Very moving stories. We hear about a mother in Kenya battling profound grief after a loss. She found deep solace by meditating on Psalm 23 daily, that repeated affirmation of a shepherd guiding her through the valley of the shadow of death. It wasn't just words for her.
It became real.
It became a deep, abiding presence that helped her process her pain. It transformed her crushing despair into a quiet, resilient hope.
Wow.
And in Europe, a refugee, having fled unspeakable hardship, managed to dissolve crippling fear by meditating on Psalm 46.1. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. That constant reflection transformed his inner landscape from one of, you know, constant vigilance and terror to one of increasing trust and peace. It gave him the mental space needed to adapt to his new life.
That's life-changing.
Absolutely. And one more in the Caribbean. A young man grappling with deep bitterness found liberation by considering God's forgiveness, as described in Micah 7:18-19. By reflecting on that profound grace shown to him, he was gradually able to release his own resentment and embrace a path towards healing.
What's truly illuminating here, listening to all this, is how these diverse stories really underscore the power of meditation and consideration as spiritual cleansing. That phrase makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm.
It's described as actively washing away toxic thoughts, helping us surrender control not to apathy, but to a deeper, more profound sense of order. This process ultimately recalibrates both mind and spirit. It aligns with that verse, Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, think about such things.
Precisely. It's a deliberate act of shaping of our inner world.
Leading to measurable shifts in perspective in how we make decisions.
You can think of that spiritual cleansing as a deliberate recalibration of your inner landscape. It's not just about feeling momentarily better, like taking an aspirin for a headache. It's about actively replacing distorted perceptions, those anxious loops we get stuck in, with truths that bring mental order and emotional stability.
Like defragmenting your mind.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Defragmenting your mind, organizing the chaos into clarity. And that leads to those measurable shifts in perspective and decision making. These stories show us it's not just an analogy, it's an observable, transformative process.
Okay, so we've explored the what, the why, and the how of this practice through these sources. Now, the crucial part, what does this all mean for you listening right now? Our source doesn't just present the concept, it offers practical, actionable steps for integrating this into daily life. Especially if you feel busy, like you have no extra time, how can someone actually start weaving this in?
And the advice is beautifully straightforward, actually. Very actionable. It emphasizes small, consistent steps over big, intimidating gestures.
Okay, small steps. Like what?
Well, in the morning. Simply begin your day with one verse. Just one single precept. Carry it with you mentally. Don't overthink it. Just let that one thought settle in.
Okay, one verse.
Then during the day, maybe at lunchtime, or during a natural pause in your work, take just a few moments, maybe 5 minutes, that's all. Reflect on his ways. Ask yourself how that precept you chose might apply to your current situation or maybe an upcoming decision.
Just a short pause to connect it.
Exactly. And then in the evening, conclude your day, perhaps, by journaling. Just jot down one way you felt guided or one insight you gained from reflecting on that verse or God's ways during the day. These aren't huge, time-consuming tasks. They're small, intentional moments designed to build a habit.
A habit of mindful, purposeful reflection.
Precisely.
So these simple steps, if you do them consistently, they can create this powerful rhythm of cleansing for your mind and soul, building that anchor the source talks about.
That's the idea.
It's about creating these little pockets of intentional thought throughout your day, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than waiting for some dedicated hour that, let's be honest, might never materialize.
Right. We all know how that goes.
And over time, these small moments of intentional focus, they accumulate. They lead to significant shifts in your internal landscape. It's like tending a garden, maybe. Consistent small efforts yield a clearer, more fruitful space inside.
That's a lovely way to put it, tending the inner garden.
So this deep dive into Psalm 119.15, it really highlights how intentional meditation on precepts and thoughtful reflection on ways can lead to profound spiritual clarity, offering peace, groundedness in what feels like a noisy, often chaotic world. It's about taking proactive control of your inner landscape.
Yeah, proactive is the key word again, which brings up an important question perhaps for you to consider this week. In what specific area of your life could a deliberate pause to meditate on a guiding principle and consider a higher perspective bring maybe a new sense of calm or clarity or just direction?
That's a good challenge.
Is it maybe in your relationships? Your professional decisions, how you manage daily stress, or maybe even just how you navigate the overwhelming news cycle. Where could this apply for you?
Yeah, where could that focus make a difference? We really encourage you to maybe pick one verse, just one simple truth that resonated with you from our discussion today and meditate on it daily this week.
Mm.
Perhaps even share its impact with a friend. Sometimes saying it out loud helps deepen your own understanding. And maybe consider journaling just one area where you feel you need to consider God's ways more carefully. Make that a conscious point of reflection.
Small steps.
Small steps.
Yeah.
Because this isn't just about absorbing information, is it? It's about practical, tangible application.
Yeah.
We really hope this deep dive has given you some valuable nuggets of knowledge and insight to carry forward and, well, more importantly, to apply in your own journey.